Hello, hello, hello out there in podcast land. You have reached Johnny Has the Keys, where we talk about horror movies and science fiction films and those key elements that lift them above the average genre fare. Welcome back, if you're here again. If you're new to us, we're very grateful that you are here. We're curious as how we heard or how you heard about us. And If you would, we'd like you to hit that subscription button on YouTube or subscribe to us on your podcast platform of choice. I am here with my co-host and friend David Horton in the year 2022. Can you believe it?
Yeah, I can't. No, I can't believe it. I never thought we as a race would live this long.
No, it's great. I'm in sunny New York. See?
Yeah, look at you. It's all beautiful there in January.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, it's great to be back after a three-week hiatus over the holidays. We'd like to welcome people. What's been going on with you, Mr. Horton? What's going on in your genre world?
Nothing. Had a little bit of time off to catch up on some stuff and watch some things, but mostly spent some family time, you know, had to do the holidays. Did get to do a New Year's Eve party, and that was crazy and way too long and late.
I don't stay up that late anymore.
I realized I probably shouldn't either, you know. But working at the theater, I end up having to stay. So, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So that was fun. And still progressing through my Hannibals. I'm still trying to catch up and finish Hannibal. And I've also started and dived into and finished up through the second season of, yes, Star Trek Voyager, because I only watched the first two seasons ever when it first came on. So I thought
that's Greenway or whatever. Janeway. Right?
Yes.
Janeway. Yeah.
Catherine Hepburn of space. Yes. So I thought I would watch, try to, you know, be a good Star Trek fan and watch all of it. And it's just the way I remember it. So I'm still slogging through, but we'll see. Hopefully, you know, hopefully I'll find some appealing stuff and people won't hate me or whatever.
Yeah. Clearly I'm in New York, but it looks like you've been to Chicago.
Yeah. I got my Chicago hat. This is actually in honor of our friend Mr. Pitts, who is living in Chicago. And I got this on my first trip a few years ago when I went up there again on business, and Bill and I hung out, and I got this hat. And this
there you go.
Cubs hat.
When I was with him, I got a shirt, but I bought it at Wrigley Field.
Well, interestingly, I wear this occasionally, and invariably I'll end up out in public and they'll go, some random person I do not know at all will come up and go, what do you think about da 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 and so and so? And I'm like, because I couldn't tell you one player or a score at all.
I couldn't unless it was the 1990s. Did you see Greg Maddux throw that no hitter?
Yeah. Can I say that back?
It went into extra innings.
Okay. Greg Maddux?
Maddux. He pitched for them and then the Braves.
I'll remember Cy Young. I'll use that next time because I just go, you know, this was a gift.
I think it's funny that I know more about baseball and I'm the gay one.
Yeah. There you go.
Well, I have not been anywhere unusual.
No.
I think that you would agree. Because I'm usually either trapped in the world of the zombies of The Walking Dead, because I tend to rewatch those over and over again.
Yes.
Or the world of Marvel.
Yes.
And that is what I did. I'm still in the timeline, and I watch these four movies.
So let's see. You've got Guardians
2, both 1 and 2.
Age of Ultron and Ant-Man. Is that in order?
Yeah.
That's in sequential order, not in release order, right?
It's in both. Well, you know what? You may be right. It may be just timeline order. Yes, it is timeline order.
I believe Ultron came out before Galaxy 2, I think.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. I was wondering if they came out back to back when I was watching them.
Yeah, I think it came out before. Yeah, because there was a 2-year gap between Guardians and Guardians 2.
Yeah. I love these movies. I especially love the Guardians of the Galaxy movies. They're just great movies. I feel like they're done right.
They are if you enjoy a lot of lightness with your superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
It's because they're very funny. They're, you know,
they are.
Yeah.
Well, but I mean, they it's very similar themes and motifs that we've covered in movies like Serenity and Star Wars, too. They're like, you know, scalawags.
Yes. Yes. I would agree with mm-hmm. that. Wait, now two was with his dad, right? That's where
yeah.
we meet Echo or Eno or whatever
his Ego.
Name is. Ego. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he's Kurt Russell, which is even more fabulous because I like seeing Kurt Russell in movies. I've always liked him.
Escape from Ego. Ego. Yeah.
Escape. That's what the end of the movie is. Escape yeah. from Planet Ego before you're dead. Yeah. Get out of the brain.
See, I am. See, of that, of the four that you've got up, I have to say, I'm not big fans of any of them except Ultron, because Ultron is another Joss Whedon, and you can tell mm-hmm. it's. And I'm one of those that really likes Ultron a lot, as opposed to a lot of the Marvel fandom says no, Whedon sucks, he's terrible, he shouldn't do it, that was a terrible movie, blah blah blah. And I really like Ultron a lot.
I do remember liking the comic book Ultron better. But I still like the movie. Out of these four, my least favorite is probably Ant-Man.
Yeah.
I like the premise of Ant-Man, but it just doesn't feel as much like a Marvel movie to me as the other three.
Agreed. It feels more like a comedy that's attached to the Marvel universe to me. And Rudd is part of that, you know. Mm-hmm. Again, look at these. Even with the exception of Ultron, all three of those I would classify as comedies. All three of those movies.
Well, funny that you should mention that, because I did a lot of history on the Ant-Man movie, and it was developed back in 2006 by Edgar Wright. And that's why.
Yep.
A lot of the same scripts survived, and he got in a fight with Marvel and quit, and they had to find another director because he wanted it to be solo and no connection to any of the other Marvel movies, and they needed him for the Avengers. Right. And he is an original Avenger. I mean, yeah. I know that from the comic books. So,
but
anyway.
It's Honey, I Shrunk the Kids in Marvel, you know, sort of thing.
Kinda. I mean, it's really – I mean, I love – the premise and what he can do, but it is really funny when they cut to like that Thomas the Choo Choo train going around and you just see a little thing get knocked down.
Yeah.
Because it's like this epic battle going on and all you see is this little thing fall over.
Dink. Yeah. And he rides, doesn't he ride ants like they're horses kind yes. of thing or something?
And yeah. he did that in the comics too. So, yeah.
Well,
but see, in the comics, it was Hank Pym, it was not
his
Scott.
Son. Scott.
Yeah. No, the cat burglar that he conned into doing it or whatever, tricked into doing it.
Okay.
It was the original guy and Wasp. But apparently there's a second generation now comic book wise, and that's what they went with for this story. So they just have him as an older man, the brain, the Alfred or whatever you want to call him.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, but anyway, yeah, I had a lot of fun. Visiting these Marvel things, and I thought it might be appropriate
to yes,
go back and talk about them in our brief week of genre fair.
Of welcome
because
back. Mm-hmm.
Why would that be?
Well, because this week we and I've got to get my notes up because I've been listening to you and haven't done it at all.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Should I do it? What do I need to?
No, that's okay. Word? I can do it very
banter or vamp.
Stretch, stretch.
Keep
stretch.
Vamping.
We are covering a very good film, in my opinion, today. I'll just go ahead and say it. I love this movie. We are covering 2012's Avengers. This was to many, it was definitely at the time, I think, the culmination of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's what they were building up to. It's showing DC how to do it right. Ironically, you know, Marvel and Kevin Feige and the Brain Trusts always said, you know, we're going to do these independent hero movies, all focal pointing into Avengers. And then we'll do more independents focal pointing into the next Avengers. And then the next will be the culmination. As opposed to DC, which was like, we're going to start with Justice League and put them all in there. And then we'll do an Aquaman movie. And then we'll do, you know, didn't work. Did not work. Whereas Avengers did. Came out in 2012. For those of you who haven't seen it, please go watch it now because we will spoil the bejesus out of it, I'm sure. But
everybody has seen this movie, David.
I hope so. I hope they like make small children watch it in, you know, kindergarten. You have to watch Avengers. Because it has so much going for it and it's so good. I mean, the synopsis in a just a brief, you know, microcosm is basically Loki, who is Thor's brother, appears on Earth, with, what we know of at this time as a glowing blue scepter. And he wants to take over the Earth, mostly to thwart Thor, but also just because he can. He is backed by an army called the Chitauri, which, were kind of, which he's,
well, word of mouth to begin with. But yeah,
he's semi got control over, but doesn't realize if he does or not. And basically starts this battle to take over Earth from like the very first scene. And he is thwarted or battled against by, quote, Earth's mightiest heroes, which is their first time to all band together, which leads to a lot of internal conflict because these are all singular superheroes who aren't really used to working as a team. But the little mid-credit scenes or end-credit scenes from all the other movies kind of play out, and we see what Nick Fury has been wanting to do this entire time, which is basically the Avengers Initiative, which is getting all of these heroes to work together to defend the Earth. Do you remember the first time you saw this movie?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think I saw the first day it was out at like 10:30 or 11 in the theater, and there was not many people in there, and I watched it in 3D. I paid for everything, and I watched it in 3D at like 10:30 that morning when it opened.
I watched the first show that morning, too, and ended up going back the next day to an afternoon show, which had a little bit more people and everything else. I've since owned it, of course, in several iterations and have watched it, you know, over a dozen and a half times, probably. This is my go-to Marvel. I mean, when we did last season, when we did Endgame and everything else, I've said before, my favorite Marvel movie of all of them so far is Winter Soldier. I just like the way that movie is structured. I like the dynamics of the entire thing. But this is definitely a very close number two, and it's always my go-to. If I'm just scrolling and there's nothing to watch, I'll go, I'll watch Avengers again. I love the dialogue. I love the pacing. I love the effects, everything. From the very first time I saw it, I was blown away in the theater. When I left, I was like, wow. And you leave with that kind of, yes! We are the mightiest people on the planet.
We saved Earth.
Well, it's like that last scene where, you know, Fury is talking to the council, those mysterious black shadowy people.
Powers Booth.
Yeah. Who had a great role in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., by the way. Powers Booth has a great role in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., that character. But anyway, and they're saying, so was this your plan all along, you know, Secretary Fury or whatever? And he says, they said something like,
he said, I ain't your secretary.
No, it says something about, I'm trying to remember the exact line. I should have written it down, but it's something to the effect of, the whole planet knows about the Avengers now. And he says, no, every planet knows about Avengers now, the Avengers now. And it's just so good. You leave that way going, that's right. Yeah. Come on.
I mean, you mentioned Infinity War and Endgame. And by then, it was like putting on a comfortable shoe. and it was, they're both fantastic movies, incredible mm-hmm. movies. Mm-hmm. But this was the introduction, and this movie, I'm sure Joss Whedon has a lot to do with it.
Yes.
But this movie has elements of classic Hollywood in it too that make it as strong as it is.
Mm-hmm.
I'll get to it when we get to keys, but you'll know exactly what I'm talking about when I say okay. it. So,
okay. I'm curious.
But I love the script is really smart. And I meant to ask you, I thought it was kind of ironic that it was co-authored by Zach Penn, who we just covered doing Ready Player One, which is not a great script.
Mm-hmm. True.
So true. What happened there? What's their relationship?
I don't know. From what I did in the research, Zach did a lot of the original plotting with Kevin Feige kind of supervising, as far as these are the bullet points we need to make sure we hit. You know, we okay. need to hint at Thanos in this somewhere. We need to.
That was more Whedon that said that, from what I read.
Yeah, right. But yeah. but Zach was doing a lot of the overall structure, whereas Whedon was doing all of the coolness. He was, you know, what he does best: mm-hmm. the language, the dialogue, the character interactions, the pace.
I just read somewhere where he said that Loki can't be the main villain. There has to be a bigger baddie behind him, and I suggest Thanos. So I don't know if he was just trying to take credit for Thanos or what, but it sounded like it was Josh's idea. I don't know.
Well, and you know, it's just there at the beginning and the end. It's just the, right. the you know, it's just the prologue and the epilogue that even have Thanos.
Mm-hmm.
And just enough. I mean, because me being the comic book ignorant that I was, you know, when this purple dude turned around and smiled at the end, I was like, who is that? And what does that mean?
I thought it was a Skrull. When I saw that chin, I thought it was a Skrull. I didn't yeah. know who it was. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because it's not until, I guess, is it Winter Soldier? Which is the one where, it's Ultron where he says, I'll do it myself.
And I'll puts do the it glove myself, on. I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think you're right. But this, I mean, movie from the very beginning, I mean, we are in a huge action sequence right at the open, you know, and I love the way it does that. Mm-hmm. It's Loki's, what I call Loki's arrival sequence. And it's just great. I mean,
it's a great opening, because all of a sudden you've got two characters you know are good turned to bad, like instantly.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, Hawkeye and that doctor from Thor, I can't think of his name.
Yeah, Dr. Selvie.
Yeah, all of a sudden transformed into his henchmen.
Yeah, but and I kind of jumped ahead, but you know, you start with the like we said, the teaser with the
Chitauri.
The Chitauri guy saying, you know, we've got this Loki dude and we'll work with him and yada yada, and Thanos is going, well, we'll see. And then he goes, and what will the Earthlings do but burn? And the burn goes through the clouds down into the helicopter going, and I was going, see, now I'm in it. I'm just right there. mm-hmm. But yeah, Loki's arrival, the whole chase through the, you know, in the Jeep and everything is great.
With the compound imploding.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We get to see the establishment.
Basically, folks don't know out there, the place is imploding because they opened a hole into another dimension, and that's what Loki came through, and everything's unstable or something.
Yes. Yeah. Power and Hawkeye's the one that actually says, well, you know, the Tesseract is a door, right? Doors work both ways.
Yeah.
You know, and then all of a sudden he comes and appears. I went, yeah. Mm-hmm. And we get a two or three little great scenes here with Coulson, which is nice, showing that he's, you know, he is still Nick Fury's right hand man. He's still mm-hmm. there. He's still going to do the right thing. And that sets him up really well for, you know, later in the movie. This has such a great comic book feel. The very first line is, the Tesseract has awakened. Yeah, that's pretty true. And it's that you open Chapter the comic book and you get that first shot of just, you know, the staircase in space and the blue orb and all of that. Mm-hmm. You know? So yeah, that's a pretty good comic book opening.
It is. And there's really three acts in this. The one that you just mentioned, the beginning and opening with the introduction of everybody and Loki coming to conquer. But then you've got the second act, which takes place primarily above New York or the ocean on the Helicarrier Shields, mm-hmm. giant four engine. It looks like a floating aircraft carrier.
Yeah,
that's what it looks like. That's a lot of action takes place there. And then of course you don't think it can get any crazier, and all of a sudden at the end there's a hole in the sky and we're being invaded by extraterrestrial hostiles just attacking New York.
Yeah.
So there's three major acts in this movie.
I could see that. You've got the opening and the arrival, then you've got the team building, and then you've got the final battle, the final game. Yeah.
Yeah. In between Act 1 and Act 2 is a little bit of solo action where they're like, where, what's his name? Coulson says, you get the big guy. She says, you know, Stark doesn't listen to me. He said, no, I have Stark. You get the big guy.
Oh, yeah.
And he's talking about Hulk. And it's so they all go off on their separate little missions to get people. And I absolutely love Mark Ruffalo as Hulk. I think he's phenomenal.
He is phenomenal.
I never even saw the Ed Norton movie, and I don't know that I ever need to because Mark Ruffalo is Hulk to me.
So, this all seems horrible.
Yeah, I don't think you need to. I did see it, and it wasn't that he was bad. Just Ruffalo adds so much subtext to it he keeps talking about the other guy. I like that. There's only one time when he slips and says the Hulk, and he does. But he keeps calling him the other guy. He has all of this kind of repressed energy in all of his delivery when he says stuff. Like when she goes, when he first meets Captain America and Black Widow's there, and she goes, "You guys might want to come inside. The air is going to get a little thin." And Captain America goes, "Is this a submarine?" And they all go over to the edge and it starts rising up. and Ruffalo goes, "Oh no, this is much worse." He goes, "Is this a submarine?" And he goes, "Really? You think they want me in an enclosed metal tube?" And then it cuts and they're rising up. He goes, "Oh no, this is much worse."
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love the scene where Coulson calls Black Widow, who is in the middle of an interrogation to a chair. That is the best, even though it's not her introduction to the series, it's the best intro to her in this movie they could possibly ask for. It's like James Bond times 10.
Oh, yeah.
Because she's literally like, "I'm in the middle of something. Can I put you on hold?"
Yeah.
She's tied up.
You know, she goes, "Really? I'm in an interrogation right now. This idiot's telling
me
everything."
They don't realize that she's interrogating them.
And the Russian guy goes, "I'd not tell everything. What?"
Yeah.
And then she kicks the crap out of all of them. And then just picks up her shoes and says, "Okay, where do I go?"
And that shot of her picking up her shoes on the way out is like beautiful cinematography. Yeah.
Perfect. Yes. His cinematography all the way through this, I think his shot choices are brilliant. They're both, you know, we did Creepshow and we talked about, you know, the framing devices and everything else. Mm-hmm. This is a comic book without the overtness of the comic book frame, but it has comic book shots. I mean, Over Your Shoulder is one of the most iconic MCU shots ever, which is that panorama. First time they all form as a team, and it's such a great.
I have a long shot of it too, right
shot.
There.
Yeah, the way he frames it, the way he tells the stories, he can tell these intimate close-ups with Cap or Natasha, until these great moments, and then go to these huge epic shots of like the helicarrier turning over and the airplane sliding off the edge of it and everything. Mm-hmm. It's just massively big. And those special effects still hold up. I mean, this is from 10 years ago and it still looks awesome.
Yeah, it does.
And totally believable. I mean, I believe all of it. But yeah, that whole sequence at the beginning when they're on their separate missions, even down to going to hunt for Loki when he suddenly appears in Germany, you know, that's essentially a solo mission with Cap, and Tony shows up with it. Playing AC/DC.
AC/DC, yeah.
And you just barely hear it a little bit. And it's still just a shot of Natasha. And we hear it. And then you hear his Tony Stark's voice go, "Hello, Agent Romanoff. You miss me?" And she just kind of smiles for a second. And then he suddenly blows Loki down and then goes, "Okay, your move, Reindeer Games." Because he's
right. Yeah, he has nicknames for everybody.
All that dialogue is so Joss Whedon, but perfect for these characters. Yeah. You know, he is just so good at that little, you know, even though
it's just rapport. It's casual rapport between people who are friends and know each other.
Give yourself some credit, please. Stark Tower is your baby. Give yourself 12% credit.
12%?
An argument can be made for 15.
12%?
Well,
my baby?
Did do all the heavy lifting. Literally, I lifted the heavy things. And sorry, but the security snafu, that was on you.
Oh.
My private elevator.
You mean our elevator?
It was teeming with sweaty workmen. I'm going to pay for that comment about percentages in some subtle way later, aren't I?
Not going to be that subtle.
You know, or don't, like she goes, "I'd stay out of this, Cap. These guys are basically gods." You know, and Captain America's response is,
"There's only one God, man. And I'm pretty sure he doesn't dress like that."
And then he jumps out of the plane.
Jumps out of the plane.
Yeah. Thor doesn't show up till way into the movie. It's like 45 minutes, I think.
Yeah, and that's part of it. That's his tag along is after they've captured Loki. Mm-hmm. In Germany, and they're flying back, and it starts lightning, and he goes, "What's the matter? Afraid of a little lightning?" And he goes, "I don't particularly like what follows." And suddenly Thor lands on the top of the plane.
Right.
You go, yeah.
My big brother's here.
Just so much dialogue. Thor and Loki are talking, and Thor finally goes, "Listen, Loki." And all of a sudden he gets hit by Captain America, knocked off, and Loki goes, "I'm listening." Because he's not there.
Yeah, yeah. Every line, and we said this, if you go back and listen to the first Avengers coverage we did, which was Infinity Game Infinity War and Endgame, every line of dialogue is there for a reason, and none of it feels like it's there just to show a character. I mean, every character's there for a reason. It's we joked in that episode about how sometimes they give Uhura or Sulu lines in Star Trek just so you can see them.
Right.
But in this, they're essential.
Yes.
You know, everything
or they're perfect for what it is. That quip or whatever, even down to "That man's playing Galaga." No, he didn't think anyone would notice, blah, blah. And they go through this whole big, huge scene. They all go to the lab, and suddenly it cuts back and he switches the monitor and starts playing Galaga. And
exactly.
You just go, yes.
And in between all that, Tony walks over and casually, he's talking to everybody and casually bugs a monitor during the entire speech. And no one notices because he's so smooth.
Yeah.
He's like James Bond. Yeah.
Dr. Banner, you know, so many things we're used to, and I'm sure comic book guys were just loving it because that's really the meeting of Tony Stark and Banner is right there at that table when he goes...
Geek out.
It's good to meet you, Dr. Banner. Your work on anti-electron collisions is unparalleled, and I'm a huge fan of the way you lose control and turn into an enormous green rage monster.
I love when he pokes him.
Yeah. What's your secret? Pilates? A huge bag of weed. Yeah, the dialogue is just so rich too, and it's also, you know, there's certain times when you're getting into a movie and either the exposition seems real clunky, or there's so much given in a particular line and you almost miss it. And you have to go, wait, I need to rewind and see exactly what he said because I don't know. None of that happens here. The exposition flows from everything else. You know, mm-hmm. at this point, we're at war. Hey, do we come to your planet and, you know, stir up a bunch of trouble? You know, that sort
of thing. Even the transitionary stuff, like when Hawkeye, he says, what do you need? And he says this, this, and an eye. Or whatever.
Yeah.
And then the next scene you see is Loki walking down the stairs, whapping people with that cane. And it looks like it hurts like hell.
Oh,
and
yeah.
he just throws that guy on the table and goes for his eye. And you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love it. Mm-hmm. Everybody has a purpose that works, that's believable in the world that they've created here, but works. And doesn't seem, to your point, seem thrown in for any reason. Mm-mm. You know, Hill has great lines and great dialogue and is a good assistant to Fury.
Fury and Coulson. Well, Coulson, I guess, is a coworker, but yeah. We've already talked a lot about it. Are there any scenes that strike you?
Well, just start at the beginning and just go till that end credit. And that works for me. let's see. I did make a brief list. So I do like, I love the fight in the woods between Thor and Captain America.
It's up there in my number one, big time.
And just all the dialogue, the choreography of that fight shows all of their powers, which is really mm-hmm. cool. I love the one where Iron Man hits and Thor holds him off, and then he's got this, and Thor grabs his wrist and he goes, and just hits him with just the way that's choreoed, the dialogue.
Do not touch me again.
Then don't take my stuff.
You have no idea what you're dealing with.
Shakespeare in the Park?
Doth mother know you weareth her drapes?
And the line, Shakespeare in the Park.
Yeah.
Hilarious. Yeah. That scene, and I'll go ahead and reveal it, is one of the big keys for me. That scene where all the good guys are fighting each other is the same kind of thing they used to do in John Ford Westerns, where John mm-hmm. Wayne would fight with his best friend, or his future best friend, first.
Really good point.
And it builds this it's kind of hyper masculine camaraderie. So some females may not like it. But I like it. And it's reinforced when Hulk does his little punch to Thor. It's like they just revisit it for just a second when that happens, because mm-hmm. it's like they still fight regardless oh, yeah. if they're friends.
Oh, yeah, they still disagree. You know, that whole put on the suit. You know, what are you without that?
Yeah. Big man in a suit of armor. Take that off. What are you?
Genius, billionaire, playboy, philanthropist.
Yeah, they fight like a family.
And it makes sense. We're a team, but we really don't know our own strengths and weaknesses. And as a matter of fact, going into it, we all kind of thought we're the best. Mm-hmm. And it's slowly realizing that no, we have to do it together to make this work. And it's exactly what Fury was wanting, them to realize that they each have talents and abilities that'll work. And it comes to fruition in another one of my scenes, which leads to one of my favorite shots, which is when Iron Man actually says, okay, call it, Cap, meaning, what's the plan, Captain America? And Captain America immediately goes, okay, we need eyes up here. You know, Hawkeye, you're mm-hmm. up here. You're over here. You're da da da. You bring them around, and you and I'll stay here and bring Loki's fight to us, kind of thing. And Hulk, smash. So, and you know, and it then smash. It cuts to that single shot of each of them doing something incredible. You know, it's right. just really great. That's mm-hmm. one of my favorites too. But I love the fight scene, and that ends with the. Mr. Banner, would you please put down the scepter? you know, and he's holding
it. Oh, you're talking about the argument scene. It's not really a fight scene as much as it is a big argument. Yeah,
the big argument.
Well, it's when they all realize that S.H.I.E.L.D. has been lying to them.
Yes.
And Cap was last to know, but he's the one that went and dug up the physical proof.
Yeah. But himself, literally. And, right. and then Tony has the, Nick, what were you lying?
Exactly. And then you see Bruce getting hotter and hotter. Absolutely love the scene with Black Widow and Loki, where it's a repeat of what she's doing originally. She's interrogating him, and he thinks he's being mean to her.
Well, and only in Hollywood at that time, with Joss Whedon at the helm and all the Marvel backing them, could you have a character say,
"I won't touch Barton, not until I make him kill you. Slowly, intimately, in every way he knows you fear. And then he'll wake just long enough to see his good work. And when he screams, I'll split his skull. This is my bargain, you mewling quim."
I mean, how did he get that dialogue in there?
I don't even know what that is.
Well, look it up. Then that's when she realizes he's going to use the Hulk, which is another good sequence. The whole Barton taking over the helicarrier is a great action sequence. And the way everybody works, the physics. Every time I watch this movie, I love the physics of Tony in that suit, and the fact that, like, when he falls and drops and he slowly, like, adjusts himself with his hands and feet, just the way he has to, like, a second to get ready, and then he can shoot off and stuff, just the way they do stuff. And the whole thing of him starting the turbine again and then saying, "You got to cut this off so that I can fall through. If you don't, I'll be churned up." And Captain America can't get to it. And he's going, "Okay, Captain, now. Okay, now." And then he falls back against the blade and goes, and then goes,
I love how he goes and helps Cap immediately, because he realizes that he was in trouble too.
Yeah.
I also love what we were leading up to when Black Widow discovers Loki's plan is to unleash the Hulk, and all of a sudden it happens. And when she sees it happening, she is terrified. And
you can
see it in her face, because she doesn't know, you know, what to expect. I mean, Hulk later becomes a little bit more tame, but right now he's not. And that whole scene of him chasing her through that helicarrier, I mean, he's too big to fit in the hallways. He's just obliterating everything as he runs.
It's great. And his fight with Thor is great. You know, when Thor throws the hammer and he tries to catch it and it pulls
and it takes him.
You know, he rips off a wing and throws it like a frisbee, and Thor has to duck. I mean, it's just, it's a good fight. It's really great. And it builds up to this, one of my favorite Marvel moments in general is the two scenes with Coulson. You know, it is a spur to the motivation of the third act, you know, to really forming the Avengers, as Nick Fury says, they needed a push, you know. But that scene between him and Loki with the weapon and everything else, he goes, "I don't even know what it does. You want to see?" And then he gets stabbed. And then later on, after Thor's gone, Loki's talking to him and he goes, "You'll never do it because you know, you lack heart and all that kind of stuff."
Conviction.
And he goes, "Yeah, conviction." And he goes, takes a step, and he just blows him away. And has that line about, "Oh, so that's what that does."
Yeah.
And then his death scene, you know, the guy rabbited boss, "I'm sorry."
And then what happened? Didn't they bring him back or something?
Yes. That's the whole point that I keep saying about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is so awesome. In the pilot of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., we are following a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent and a couple of others, and they find a semi-superhero, and they have to do this thing, and they take him back to S.H.I.E.L.D. for this interrogation, and all of a sudden, out of the shadows steps Coulson. And no one person reacts, but the other two don't. And definitely the audience reacts, but you don't know until, like, halfway through the first season that Coulson doesn't realize that he was dead. He literally was dead, but he doesn't know what happened to him and doesn't remember. So the last part of the first season is him doing his own research to find out how he was brought back. And it's really a cool integral part of all of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. But it's really neat, and you should, everyone should watch it. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is awesome. It's a neat
cheat.
It is. No, it is a cheat because, you know.
Yeah.
What have I said moving forward? I really am skeptical because, you know, I've never was a big comic book reader, and I don't like the fact that there's never any finality. There never is. Somebody's, you'll come back. We cloned him. Oh, he's a robot version of the former one. Oh, it's his brother.
It's the multiverse.
Oh, it's just a new reboot with a new writer, so we don't care, and we just brought him back to life for no freaking reason. And it's like, okay, then there's no emotion to why people die. You know? It's like people saying, we're going to bring Natasha back. No, don't, ever. I loved it. Her ending was fine. Leave it the way it is.
They're making a Black Widow, too.
Oh, my God.
I think I read that somewhere. I can't remember.
It has to be another prequel because, you know, she died. Just saying.
Yeah. Actually, ironically enough, the next four movies that I'm watching in the timeline order, mm-hmm. Black Widow was inserted into there. So I'm going to watch it for the first time in the original order.
Oh, timeline order, not original.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Timeline order, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but like, what if? You know, what if is the same way? Who cares? You know, it's just, we're just playing and doing whatever version we want to of these people in these in this multiverse.
But you get to see them in different scenarios, and it's fun. And you get to see them with the same rapport in some cases.
I don't want fun in different scenarios. I don't want fun.
Yeah, it's fun.
I don't like fun. That's okay.
Yeah, okay. You pout in your little Chicago Cubs hat. You just do that.
I don't want to pout over in the corner.
All right. Well, we've talked scenes. I don't have a lot on cast. I have a little. I mean, we know who's in this movie, obviously. Oh, Robert Downey Jr., Chris Evans, Mark Ruffalo, Chris Hemsworth, Scarlett Johansson. Mark Ruffalo was cast as Banner. I don't know if you know this, but the director of The Hulk, his name is Louis Leterrier or something. He's French. I can't pronounce it. Wanted Ruffalo originally, and Edward Norton somehow got cast. I don't know if Ruffalo wasn't available or not. So when it came to this movie, Norton didn't want to do it because, I don't know, he just felt, I don't know, he just didn't want to be a part of it. I guess he didn't want to get typecast or just stuck in the same movies. And Ruffalo jumped on it. And they're friends, and he said it was with Norton's endorsement. So I found that interesting, that he was the original choice and then ended up getting the part.
Did you see him in Spotlight? Mark Ruffalo?
Ruffalo?
Uh-huh.
No.
He's really good in that. And he's good in another movie I like. I like both of the version. I mean, both it and the sequel, which is the magician one. What is it? Sometimes, you know, Catch Me If You Can. It wasn't that one. No, what was it? It's the one where, shoot, now I can't remember it. Now You See Me is the name of it.
I've seen him in stuff. I saw him in, it's not This Is Us. That's the television series. There's a show about, there's a movie about lesbians with Julianne Moore, and he's in it, and I can't, and they're raising kids. It's her and Annette Bening, and he's in it, and he's really good. And I really want to see, and I've not seen it because it's on HBO, but The Normal Heart, which is a gay drama that Barbara Streisand had the rights to and tried to get produced for like four decades and finally got it made with Mark Ruffalo a few years back, and I want to see that. But I've always been a fan of his.
Yeah,
he's a good,
really strong actor.
He's a good character actor. He kind of can blend in really well too. Going back down to some of the S.H.I.E.L.D. people, Cobie Smulders played Agent Hill. that you mentioned.
Does that not sound like a stripper's name?
Kobe Smulders. It just,
to me, makes me.
It sounds like a name on The Simpsons to me. Kobe Smulders.
Yeah, but she's great. And I love Agent Hill in every movie she's in.
She is great, but she was not the original choice. You want to know who was?
Oh, my gosh. Who?
Amanda Peet.
Huh.
They look kind of similar, don't they?
Possibly could have seen that. Yeah.
Okay. I thought they looked kind of similar.
She was in The L Word. I think that's when I first remember seeing Kobe Smulders. And she did How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah, I've not seen either of those.
Yeah, okay. Series. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I love her. I think she's great.
Cool. Again, these are little things, not much on cast. Gwyneth Paltrow was not in the movie, and apparently Whedon didn't want her in the movie, and Robert Downey fought for her and insisted that she must be in the movie. I did not know that. But she's great in it. That whole scene with her in the beginning is fantastic.
I had like 12% of a moment or whatever. Yeah.
Exactly. That it's great. It's perfect. And the scene where he thinks he's going to die and he's calling her phone and she doesn't see it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. It's awesome. And I'm like, why would you not want her in the... Oh, what it was Whedon thought that bringing people from satellite films would lessen the impact of the group. That was what I heard his reasoning was.
Could understand that, yeah.
But I disagree totally. They do that all the time in these movies. It's necessary. I mean, I was cool with them having Thor's Dr. Svig, or whatever his name is, in there too.
Dr. Selvig?
Also, there's an agent, Jasper Sitwell. You may not remember him. He's he's Maximiliano Hernandez. Great character in one Walking Dead episode. He plays a cop in a great Walking Dead episode.
Well, he's huge in Winter Soldier, and he goes on to do Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Okay. Yeah. Well, he's only briefly in this, but I
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has an entire season that takes place right after Winter Soldier, and the whole season is about the fall of S.H.I.E.L.D., essentially S.H.I.E.L.D. being infiltrated by Hydra. It's really good.
Okay. Other character actors that one you've already mentioned, Powers Booth plays the World Security Council. yeah, he's awesome. I've always loved him. He died not too long ago, but we were watching him back in the 80s.
And he is in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Okay. And then also Harry Dean Stanton is in this movie.
Yes.
He's the one that finds Mark Ruffalo as Bruce Banner naked, where he is crashed through a building to Earth, and gives him a pair of pants.
You an alien?
What?
I'm out of space, an alien.
No.
Well then, son, you've got a condition.
Big and green and buck-ass nude. That's it.
Yeah, we all know him from Alien mainly, but also several other films. I've got just some ridiculous casting stuff. Lindsay Lohan reportedly auditioned for a role. I have no idea what role that was.
Yeah, in a different movie, hopefully. Yeah.
Well, it would have had to have been an Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. because it couldn't have been any of the heroes. Felicia Day, whoever that is, denied reports on being cast as Abigail Brand. Apparently, there was a rumor going around that she was cast, and she said no.
Makes sense.
Mark Shepard, Jeffrey Wright, and Jennifer Garner were all rumored for roles, which I find interesting because Jeffrey Wright is now in What If. He is the narrator.
He's brilliant.
Yeah, I love him. I've loved him since Angels in America. He blew me away in that movie, and I've loved him ever since. So
right.
That is really all I have casting-wise.
I have one cast ad.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
I love Ashley Johnson. I was in love with Ashley Johnson since I first saw this movie. She's the waitress that has several little scenes. You know, she's shown looking at Captain America at one point. He rescues
I know who you're talking about.
Bank. When she's being rescued, you know, she looks forlornly back at him as the cops are leading her away. And then she has the interview at the end where she's saying, he saved my life. I just, wherever he's at, I just want to thank him. Well, she supposedly, there's a scene that was cut that had Captain America actually going into the restaurant. This was before the attack on New York. And he actually goes into the restaurant, and she obviously is interested in him and flirting with him. And he's, you know, Captain America. And a customer leans over to him from a booth going, "Why didn't you get her number, you goof?" And it's Stan Lee. That was his cameo in originally in the script. But they ended up cutting that scene and not using it. And then she was going to go on in Captain America, Winter Soldier, and be his girlfriend. But they thought that that would interfere with Agent Carter, the girl that was actually his roommate, who was undercover. I mean, his on the, his in the apartment beside him that was actually undercover, and she was really a SHIELD agent, yada yada. So they didn't use her. She went on to be in Blindspot, which is a pretty cool genre-y sort of series they tried for a while on Fox. But she's great. I love her.
Yeah, I knew that she was there for a reason, because you do see her multiple times.
Yeah.
But they're very short.
And it's like one of cameos. Those threads where you're going, I wonder what that means. And
or if it's going to come up in the future. Yeah, right. Exactly. Right. Like an Easter
Which was
egg.
The intent, like they said. Yeah.
Okay. I don't have too much on awards. This movie was nominated for visual effects for both an Academy Award and both a BAFTA award.
Yes.
And a BAFTA award. And it didn't win either. I did not look to see what won instead. Shame on me. But anyway, it did win Saturn Awards, though. It won Best Science Fiction Film and Best Supporting Actor for Clark Gregg and Best Director Yay. For Joss Whedon and Best Special Effects for those guys. It was a nominee for writing and editing, but it did not win. So something else won those Saturns. But it did win a slew of Saturn Awards. I like those Saturn Awards. That's all I have on that. So we can continue on to any little trivias, I guess, or keys, if you're ready.
I was struggling with trying to key this whole thing just because there's so many references that grow out of this to the MCU, of course. But my biggest key that I took out
Marvel
of this,
in
and
general.
I think, but I think I mentioned this when we did, was it Endgame? It might have been Endgame. I can't remember, but this has, you said old Hollywood, like the John Ford movies. This to me also has old Hollywood, like the old witty couple dialogue stuff. Those really heavy.
Yeah, you've mentioned older, it before. Like the it's not Frank Capra.
Like some likes it.
Like
some
George
like it
Cukor,
hot.
Like George Cukor, or somebody like All About Eve. I can't remember who directed
that. That banter that goes through all of that.
I want to know why Loki let us take him. He's not leading an army from here.
I don't think we should be focusing on Loki. That guy's brain is a bag full of cats. You could smell crazy on him.
I've care how you speak. Loki is beyond reason, but he is of Asgard. And he is my brother.
He killed 80 people in 2 days.
He's adopted.
Those Cary this Grant movie movies with Katharine Hepburn, like Topper. Yeah. And yeah, exactly. I know exactly what you're talking about. I'm not sure, but I can maybe figure out what directors those are.
Yeah, but it builds like those. It has that old school dialogue where the dialogue is more important than the action scenes. You know, a lot of times in the JJ verse, the action scenes are there and they're huge set pieces, but they don't have good character development. They don't really do anything other than it's a big action sequence. And in this, like you said, the characters, the dialogue, and the actions that take place all move the plot along.
Exactly.
They're there for a reason.
And don't you find it ironic that we're talking about a major modern movie, but the conventions that make it successful date back to classic Hollywood?
Yes.
I mean, I find that amazing and so profound. And, you know, all you people out there listening, this is why we like movies. because we do recognize these things from the past, even though this is a superhero movie.
And the overall thing is, you know, the Steven Spielberg line from his honorary Academy Award, you know, if it's not on the page, it shouldn't be on the stage. The whole point is it starts with the script. It starts with the storytelling. Mm-hmm. And if you can't do that, you may have the best idea in the world, but if you can't tell the story right and in a good way,
it's Toby Hooper's life force. Yeah, or any movie you thought it was, or David Lynch's Dune. I mean, any of those huge projects that you hear are just incredible can fall flat, so mm-hmm. flat.
Yes,
Cleopatra was another one.
Yeah, doesn't matter how much money you throw at it. If you don't have the story, you don't have the
story. Dr. Doolittle.
Dr. Doolittle.
Yeah, the original Rex Harrison one.
Remember, well, even the new one is terrible.
So we've talked about old school. I'm going to go old school again. And you mentioned, you know, there's going to be a million keys to other Marvel concepts. Oh, yeah. But I'm going to go to the original. The very first issue of Avengers in 1963, they came together because Loki came to destroy the world.
Really? I did not know that it was that centric.
It was. It was not the same story, but it was the same theme.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they kind of did what they did in the first issue.
Mm-hmm. One of my keys, kind of a weird one, is Dirty Dozen. Again, going back to classic Hollywood, but it's that we've got this desperate group of individuals who are all pretty much full of themselves, who are forced into a situation to come together and work as a team and realize their own strengths to go forward. Mm-hmm. And it just reminded me of that, even though that's a war movie, this is kind of a war, you know.
It's also the whole concept of ragtag individuals becoming heroes.
Yes.
It happens in a lot of old movies, like war movie type things, and westerns too.
Well, and the key going forward out of this is what really cements them as the Avengers, but also leads to all that stuff about they don't really want to be heroes, especially Tony doesn't want to be a hero, and Captain doesn't feel like he deserves to be a hero.
Hulk wants to hide.
The same thing with Cap, and I mean, the same thing with Hawkeye and Natasha. They're used to being in the shadows. They don't want to be in the front and mm-hmm. be the leaders or the heroes or any of that. Right. So, and that becomes a theme that goes through all of the Avenger movies. Ultron has it, all the guilt, you know, that, you know, one of the keys that I have, of course, is this becomes Tony's through line all the way through to Endgame, is this assembly and the fact that the Chitauri attacked. Becomes this whole thing about there's more out there that we should be afraid of. And we need in Ultron, it's we need an armor around the world. But later on, it's Thanos is even bigger than that. And these Infinity Stones are scary sort of thing.
Yeah. This is not really a key, but this was the first Marvel movie distributed by Disney.
I'm sure so they love the profits out of it, too.
It is a Disney movie.
I have some lines that I still love. I love the Tony line about, I mean, this guy is a full tilt diva. I mean, he wants parades and things. He wants a building, a monument to the sky. Son of a bitch. When he realizes that it's going to be Stark Tower where he's going. Love that.
I love the line where he goes, what are you without that armor? And he says, millionaire, playboy, philanthropist. Yeah. It's like four things. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Big man in a suit of armor. Take that off. What are you?
Genius, billionaire, playboy, philanthropist.
So perfect.
Yeah.
A great Nick Fury line when he goes, get our communications back online. I want eyes everywhere.
Right. Because he only has one.
Yeah. And Tony does that when he first, how does Nick see this?
Yes.
You know, he covers, you know, how does he do this? And Agent Hill says, he turns around, seems exhausting.
Yeah. He turns.
Yeah, he turns, seems exhausting.
I did copy this for a reason. It's what Joss Whedon said, and something that we've already touched upon about how they fight like family. And he said in those comics, people shouldn't be in the same room, let alone the same team, and that is the definition of a family.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. And he said he lifted all of that from the early comics. Tony Stark is seen wearing a Black Sabbath t-shirt throughout a lot of this movie when he is in civilian gear. Ironically enough, that shirt, and I recognized it. I didn't need IMDb to tell me this because I'm a Black Sabbath fan. That shirt is from the Never Say Die album, which is the last album they did with Ozzy in 1978 before they fired him. I just found it ironic because you would have thought they would have used Paranoid, which has the song Iron Man on it, because Iron Man was an early Black Sabbath song. The t-shirt he's wearing is a late Black Sabbath album.
Okay.
So that's just me being a music nerd. There's something else we mentioned earlier. I can't remember if it was off camera or on camera, so if it's off, you'll have to hear that during a outtake episode. But Justice League. A lot of the Avengers owes debt to Justice League because the Justice League comic first came out in 1960. The Avengers didn't come till 1963. So there were 3 years of a superhero team over at DC before Marvel started doing it. I mean, if you exclude maybe Fantastic Four, but I don't even think Fantastic Four was out that early either. Justice League was out. I think it predates it all, a lot of the Marvel stuff. So there's a lot of, I mean, we can trash Justice League movies all we want, but another reason the Avengers exist is probably because of that comic book, Justice League of America.
This was considered the final chapter of Phase One. So when they divide the Marvel into the phases, like I said, all the independent movies went toward the Avengers. So this was the end of Phase One. That's a little trivia.
I've got some trivia as well. Two founding members of the Avengers from the comics were Ant-Man and the Wasp, which I mentioned earlier in our preface to this episode. They were replaced by Hawkeye and Natasha Romanoff, the Black Widow, in an attempt to better integrate S.H.I.E.L.D. into the story because S.H.I.E.L.D. had its own comic book. They didn't really interact a lot with the Avengers for the first few decades. Nick Fury was a white, chomping, one-eyed, cigar-chomping, one-eyed badass with his own comic book and S.H.I.E.L.D.
Right.
They just kind of incorporated it into the MCU. And I guess they used Hawkeye and Black Widow as kind of that bridge. Here's something funny. I didn't realize this when I watched it, but Gwyneth Paltrow is noticeably barefoot in all of her scenes in Stark Tower.
Yes.
And Robert Downey is in 3 to 4 inch platform shoes so that he looks taller than her.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's good.
Considering I'm 5'6", I can relate.
I have when in the first scene we see Cap, he's punching the punching bag.
He's punching several bags. He's got them lined up.
Well, yeah, he knocks the entire thing off and then goes over and grabs a new one. That's actually almost a shot-for-shot scene from Buffy. Buffy does the same thing in season 2 of Buffy. She's training.
Well, you know what? It's very funny that you mentioned that because I had that as a key and I almost forgot it. That whole Black Widow fight in the chair looks like something right out of a Buffy episode to me.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Like the whole female choreography, martial art, whatever it is she's doing, just reminded me of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah, Makes sense. I totally agree with that. Yeah.
And then the last thing, of course, I'm going to go out on this, is Marvel Zombies use the phrase instead of Avengers Assemble, mm-hmm. they say Avengers Dismember. You'd know that if you read that. And they don't do it yet in the What If episode. But they are pretty cool in the What If episode.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So, yeah, how would you rate this in the Marvel world? I mean, out of the, what is it, 20 now Marvel movies? Where does this rank for you?
It's probably number one.
Really?
I would say... I would probably take the Avengers movie over all of the individuals, all of them.
Oh, I would definitely do that anyway. Yeah. Oh, yeah. But like I said, mine is always Winter Soldier, Captain America, and then Avengers, and then Ultron. That's my top three. And then Endgame and Infinity War. Probably in reverse order. Infinity War.
I mean, yeah, they're all getting mixed up in my head right now. I really like Iron Man, the first one.
Yes.
I don't know. Yeah, I still think I mean, I was an Avengers comic book collector. I didn't collect Iron Man or Thor or any of them individually, Hulk or
yeah.
Captain America. I collected the team comic book. I didn't collect them separately. It was more efficient and easier on my pocketbook as a kid. Mm-hmm. So I got more bang for my buck by just that. So that's why I probably gravitate to the movies. However, I do think that this movie is far superiorly crafted than a lot of the other movies, too.
Well, and I will say, too, when I first saw this movie, I had not seen the Hulk yet. I had not seen the Thor first movie yet. Mm-hmm. And I had not seen... I had not seen both of those and watched this, but still could appreciate those characters and still could appreciate what they did and their stories or whatever. Went back then and watched Thor. Didn't like it, but I watched it. Went back and watched Ed Norton as the Hulk. Pretty good storytelling. I just didn't like the, Ang Lee just, they didn't have the technology to do what they were wanting to do back then.
And Ang Lee just doesn't strike me as a superhero director.
No, not really. But that works for Hulk, because it's a personal story. Banner's story is very introspective, which is very good for Ang Lee. Mm-hmm. You know, that whole, personal journey you're making and how it works out is a good, works for him.
And he can do comedy and drama. So, I mean, there's both of that in this.
You know, I said I was, I said in the early, when we first started, that I was, rewatching Voyager. And I still struggle because I don't like any of the characters. And I'm here in this movie, which I like every character yeah. in this. Even, like we said, even Powers Booth has presence and it works and I like it. Mm-hmm. That guy playing Galaga, thanks we weren't watching. But, I liked him in this.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a well-crafted movie. And if anybody was going to say to me, hey, I never watched an MCU movie, if they don't want to start from the beginning and watch Iron Man, then I would say watch this movie. And this will turn you on to the MCU. This will make you want to watch all the MCU,
mm-hmm.
I think. Don't you? I mean.
Yeah, I do. It's hard to say when you've got the history that we have or that I have with them, but I would think so.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you wouldn't want to turn them onto Ultron first or even start with Infinity Game or any of that. I wouldn't give them the Hulks, any of the Hulk movies or any of the Thor movies first. I would say go with either Iron Man or Avenger or Captain mm-hmm. America. Captain America is a good start,
I mean, it helps a little bit with Thor because of Loki. You get more of him in the Thor movies and their
troubled relationship. Yeah, but we don't need more other than, because they have a couple of good brother fights, in this.
Yeah. Oh, and I neglected my favorite scene. One of my favorite scenes is behind me where Hulk just punches Thor for no reason. That makes me laugh every fucking time.
Always liked that.
It just makes me laugh.
And ironic you said that, because I've got in my notes that culminates a shot that a lot of people don't realize how epically incredible it is. But that is the end of a single shot. Actually, no, there is a shot before this where it cuts away and they crash. But culmination of the moment. But it starts with Natasha when she...
On the motorcycle thing, the flying motorcycle.
Goes up on the motorcycle thing and she's got the guy. And it follows every single Avenger character and what they're doing.
You see Hawkeye up on the roof. You see Iron Man.
Yeah, it goes from her
by.
To Iron Man. Iron Man goes down to the bridge with Captain. Then he flies up. You see Hawkeye. Hawkeye shoots an arrow, and it goes to Hulk.
Yeah, somewhere Hulk Thor is with lands. Iron Man too, I think. Yeah.
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 Yeah, and it's just great. This is a great movie.
It's like giving them like an impromptu curtain call in the middle of the film. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that.
Or just giving them a little highlight frame. You know, this would be I turn the page and I get just what they're doing. And then suddenly that leads to this other transition over here. So
yeah. I mentioned Hulk punching Thor, and then immediately I think of Robert Downey Jr. saying, "We have a Hulk."
Please tell me you're going to appeal to my humanity.
Actually, I'm planning to threaten you.
You should have left your armor on for that.
Yeah. Seen a bit of mileage, and you've got the glow stick of destiny. Would you like a drink?
Stalling me won't change anything.
No, no, no. Threatening. No drink, you sure? I'm having one.
The Chitauri are coming. Nothing will change that. What have I to fear?
The Avengers. That's what we call ourselves. Sort of like a team. Earth's mightiest heroes type thing.
Yes. I've met them.
Yeah. Takes us a while to get any traction, I'll give you that one. But let's do a head count here. Your brother, the demigod. A super soldier, a living legend who kind of lives up to the legend. A man with breathtaking anger management issues, a couple of master assassins, and you, big fella, you've managed to piss off every single one of them.
That was the plan.
Not a great plan. When they come, and they will, they'll come for you.
I have an army.
We have a Hulk.
Oh, I thought the Beast had wandered off.
You're missing the point. There's no throne. There is no version of this where you come out on top. Maybe your army comes, and maybe it's too much for us, but it's all on you. Because if we can't protect the Earth, you can be damn well sure we'll avenge it.
Yeah. And then later on, when Hulk has Loki, it's not... I can't remember what Loki says, but the next thing you know, he is just...
Wait.
When I saw it, I couldn't believe it. That I was actually seeing it on the screen, but it was right out of a comic. He is literally slapping Loki's body to the ground like a piece of spaghetti. And you, anything human would just be fragments of bones.
Yes.
Encased in flesh. Yes. And then they just show him. He looks like what you think he would look like.
Yes, exactly.
Like, and you even hear. What the hell just happened to me?
I am a god, you dull creature, and I will not be bullied by that.
Puny god.
You even hear that little... Yeah, I read that Hiddleston, they tied a rope to his leg, and he had a whole speech there of like four or five lines, and he never knew when they would jerk him, so that it would always be a surprise, and he'd get the right reaction when he fell. But yeah, he says that, enough, I am a god, I am so tired. It's so good. Yeah.
And they improvised, or they didn't improv it, but they added a line there for Hulk that is homage to his puny humans line when he says puny god.
Well, I remember freaking out because I didn't even know Hulk could talk. And so when he said puny human, puny god, I puny went, god. What? He can talk?
Yeah, he can talk. Yeah. And I'm a huge, huge fan of Nerdy Hulk in the last two movies. When he's like, when he talks Hulk intelligently, but he's still big and green with glasses. I love that. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a little too Dr. Manhattan for me when he does that, but it's okay. You know, I can understand it.
Oh my gosh. This could be like, fortunately, it's not two films, or we could just gush and gush and gush more.
We would, yes.
But I guess it's
time. But it's a good kickoff to 2022. I mean, come on, we start with a great movie.
I think so, too. It was another reason why I put this backdrop behind me, because another thing about this film that I love is that New York is such a central character in all of Marvel comics, and never more so than it is in this movie, except maybe a Spider-Man movie. This movie is about New York to a T.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's a good geek key. I mean, I think because when Thor first brings the lightning, he's on the Chrysler Building, which is always, I think, I always associate that with Spider-Man because it's in like every movie that Spider-Man does is he goes to the Chrysler Building.
Yeah, he's usually swinging around Brooklyn or the Bronx, but yeah, he's in Manhattan too, for sure. Yep. Well, welcome to 2022, folks. We are glad you joined us for this superhero extravaganza. We can no longer say we're Marvel virgins. I think we've done at least three, maybe four now, if you include WandaVision. Woo-hoo! And we hope you enjoyed it. We hope you'll join us again next week when we'll probably be diving into my world. I can't remember what we're doing. If you are listening to us, we appreciate it. Please subscribe wherever you hear us. Or if you're watching us, you can subscribe and ring that bell on YouTube.
Please do.
If you like what you hear, we've got additional supplemental material over on patreon.com/JohnnyHasTheKeys. Lots of free stuff, and there is a subscription service if you want to get some of the more juicier stuff that we do with Star Trek and the X-Files. I will be seeing you next week, Mr. Horton.
Yes.
It's always a pleasure.
Have a good one.
All righty. Bye.